Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Everybody, it's Dr. Homebrew. Or didn't you know that?
We're here again.
Maybe someone put a sticker on it.
There you go. Push a button. Push a button. Push
through,
a button. There we go.
You have survived the Homebrew
it's
Con
like
shows.
I've been doing this show for a few times or something. I don't know.
All right.
I was going to say something funny.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. This is Dr. Homebrew, everybody. If you're listening live, Bev is not here. She's in New Orleans.
Damn.
Doing whatever Beverly does. I don't know.
Like a Twilight thing going on there?
Maybe. Who knows?
Collecting beads.
Yeah. Mm. Interview with a vampire, I think is what it is. I gotta get a sip of my water. I'm drinking a lot more water lately. I'm trying to drink less beer.
Water's good for you, I suppose.
It's good for you. I mean, especially, you know, I've been going out a little bit more recently, and the beer selection that these friggin' tap houses are... garbage, man. It's bad. Yeah. I found one that had Pevo, and I'm like, well, that's cool.
Yeah, Pevo is good beer.
I'm fine with that. But Jiminy Christmas, I went to one... first of all, there's two things about this rant that are just really weird. Mm. One, I went to this spot in Livermore. I'll just say it's in Livermore. It's in Brian's Hood, my old neighborhood. And it's a self-service tap bar.
Really?
Have you ever seen these, Brian Shar?
I have seen that for wine. I have never seen that for beer.
It's, well, I imagine it's the same concept. You get like a little RFID like bracelet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, I'm not trying to wear a bracelet. I'm not going to wear a bracelet so I can drink beer. And he goes, well, you can just hold it. I'm like, okay, good. not that, you know, I'm like against wearing bracelets, but it's a thing that multiple people have worn, and they also do food, so you have no idea how clean or dirty their hands are, what food right. or smeg is all like.
So
I'm
not going to wrap it around your dick.
Yeah, well, I did already. I put it in like chewing tobacco. Yeah.
And I'm the lucky next guy that got that one.
Yeah, but it was very weird, and you know, you could get little samples of stuff, and they had little interfaces on each tap. It was very confusing. The guy had to come out multiple times to show multiple people like how to do it. I'm like, I don't, can I just, what if I just gave you an extra dollar? Could you just pour me? But the selection they had was not good. They had all craft beer, and then they had Golden Road. And I'm like, first of all, what are we doing here? Are we a craft beer bar? Are we not a craft beer bar? And it was, I don't know, man. It was just weird. It was expensive.
The Bay Area loves nothing more than L.A., quote, craft beer.
Quote. For two beers, it was, or beer and a cider, was $20.
Holy crap.
So there's a good one of those places in Santa Cruz called Poor. And, oh God, the last time I went there, they had the Orga, the alt beer, the actual freaking alt beer from Germany, like the real deal. And they had section, a wide selection, and then some wines and stuff, and it's a lot better. I mean, the concept still, yeah, you spend a lot of money for what you get, but you get to try a lot of different things. So some people really like that, and the self-service thing is kind of a novelty, I guess. It doesn't bother me to pour my own beer, but yeah, I'm not going to give a tip on that.
Yeah, well, and then there's a line on the card for tip, which is probably standard anyway, but I wonder how many people do it. And I'm fine with it. Like, you know, walking away, I'm telling my friends, I'm like, maybe it's just not my format. It's not for me. I don't really want to do it. I would rather talk to a bartender about it and tip the guy pouring me little samples of stuff. That would be cool. But, you know, whatever. It's fine. At least I wasn't forced to drink hazy beers.
I think you get the tip money yourself because you got your own beer.
Yeah, well, it was very, I don't know, man. It was very weird and very overpriced for, like, you're doing the work. And I guess you are paying for a novelty, but I saw people coming back, like, to their tables with 4 inches of foam on their beers.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, this is what you get, right?
Yeah.
This is exactly what you get when you have people who don't know what they're doing pouring beers.
Well, A, don't know what they're doing, and B, like, stick their cup right up on the faucet so the next person person you're making out with them, basically.
I mean,
a real good, you know, a cicerone knows how to pour a beer without it even contacting the faucet. Your beer doesn't touch the next person's beer glass. That's a dirty glass coming back sometimes. I mean, technically that glass is out, so you can change them, but usually people just keep their glass and pour.
Yeah, so which was what I would do.
Here's your $1 million concept. I'm giving this away right now, by the way.
Okay, let's go.
So you take, imagine, I've been to places that have sushi.
Okay.
And it's not like sushi boat where you pick one that comes around. It's like this fast, it's a conveyor belt.
Mm-hmm.
But when something comes out, it like zip right to your table and you grab it.
Nice.
So you take like a 10-20 tap system. You put it all solenoid controlled Raspberry Pi. It'll pour a precise amount into each cup.
Yeah.
You can get a you know, taste of 5 ounce pint, whatever.
Perfectly poured.
There's some machine on the far end that spits clean glasses out on the conveyor belt. When someone orders one, it goes right to the right, computer-controlled robotically right to the right tap. You get the precise amount. It zips out to your table. You grab it and you drink it. That's the model that works.
I want 4.3 ounces of Pliny the Elder now.
Not 4.2. I want 4.3.
No, here it comes. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean,
but I prefer. I'm with you. Beer is a social beverage. There, craft beer is a complicated beverage sometimes, and sometimes you just want someone to tell you or talk to you about, well, what is this that I'm tasting? What is this that I'm drinking? And you don't want to have it be some sterile experience you could have at the liquor store, just grabbing a few bottles of beer and taking them home to try.
And this is the whole reason we exist, to talk to you about your beer.
That's right.
The entire reason. There's nothing else going on in our lives, Brian. This defines us.
Well, the other reason is to make sure that everybody knows about how awesome Five Star is.
That's correct. Go to 5-Star Chemicals and learn about it for yourself, man. You don't take our word for it, even though that's what we're paid to do. Make you believe us. Just don't do it. Just go to 5starchemicals.com. Talk to them at HomebrewCon. Talk to them wherever they are. And they're good people. They make a good product. And they will help you make better beer.
I tell my non-brewing friends about PBW. Like, you have a growler at home, get some PBW, brother. Like, get some Star Sand. Make sure that's just clean going back to the brewery, or it's just going to stale. You know, it's going to go bad after 2 days, even in the fridge.
Yeah, 100%.
I went to the 5-Star booth at HomebrewCon, chatted with those folks for a little bit. Super nice.
Yeah.
And you know, thank you, 5-Star. Really was nice to meet you in person.
Awesome. Good job, boys. HomebrewCon was cool.
Yeah, man, it was awesome. I thought it was really good. It was good. A neat little town out there, and yeah, like a kind of a small. You know, a small, big city. Never been to Rhode Island before, but, you know, Providence, it's a walkable place. You can walk. I walk from the hotel down to the where the river kind of opens up, and the boats and the windmills are out there, and just, you know, saw a lot of East Coast looking, you know, Cape Cod looking kind of houses along the way. And just really, you know. But, yeah, mostly we just went to the beer places. Bayberry Beer Hall was pretty a nice highlight there. They had a Trillium tap takeover there one night.
Gross.
It was crowded as hell.
Of course it was. Everyone's drinking yeast slurry, dude. I love it.
Yeah.
Club night, as usual, had some really creative beers. Some were great and some were, shall we just say, creative. But it's always fun to see people bring what they are really proud of. And, you know, Rhode Island was super fun. You know, for a state that's like 20 by 20 miles.
And neither a road nor an island.
Exactly. They have an amazing array of regional food, right? Mm-hmm. We had this stuff called, these things called Johnny Cakes, and they're like pancakes, but they're thinner, but they're thicker than crepe. So they're made out of cornmeal, and they have kind of a crusty edge, and they're savory, but you still put syrup on them. And they were really good. And we had
Did you have the hot wieners?
I love how everything is a blank New York system hot wiener. We had Olneyville New York system hot wieners. I think didn't we do that at different times, Brian?
Yeah,
like I think you and Korber had gone like right before we did or right after we did
or something. BN party, yeah,
right by the BN party.
Okay,
so these wieners are like. Do you want to describe these or should I?
Go ahead. We've talked about them before. We talked about it on the session, so we're
right,
familiar.
So no point in discussing them.
Yeah.
They were really good.
That's good.
But I had coffee milk with my hot wiener, and
it was damn
good.
Nice.
I really enjoyed
good food
that.
There, yeah.
That sounds good.
Regional stuff.
Had an awful.
Oh, yeah.
Awful big and awful good. It's a malt made with ice milk. It's a trademark of some particular ice cream store chain. And it was awful big and awful good. I really like it.
That sounds good.
Got the lobster rolls.
Speaking of awful big and awful loud, I don't know, whatever. We have Jay on the line, and we're going to be speaking with Jay about his Irish Extra Stout. Jay, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Just fine.
Hanging in there?
We're starting
hanging
with it.
In there.
It's a Wednesday, bro.
Big dark beard.
We're almost done. We're almost out of this week, man.
Been under the stars.
There you go.
Kind of nice.
Nice, man.
Good deal.
Nice work. So this is an Irish extra stout. I wasn't aware that that was a thing.
It is a thing.
What's Irish extra stout? Anybody want to tell me about it?
It's a fuller-bodied black beer with pronounced roasted flavor, often similar to coffee and dark chocolate.
I should have
malt complexity. It's not Guinness draft, so this is the big distinction, right?
It has a range. It can be fairly bittersweet to bitter, and there's some more balanced versions going to have a little more malty richness, but the bitter versions are going to be quite dry. And we'll talk about which kind of version of it this one is when we get to it here.
Yeah. All right.
But
what I love about this style is like. Well, one of the examples is Sheaf Stout. Right?
Oh, yeah. So, I got to have a Sheaf Stout.
I used to love back in the early days of the 90s when I started getting excited about craft beer, I could get Sheaf and Chingu, which is like a Brazilian beer from the Safeway. And, man, I used to drink that stuff all the time. It was so exotic and different, so different from anything else you'd get in the U.S.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it.
Nice. Jay, have you done this style before, or is this new territory?
You know, I don't think so. To be honest, I was trying to brew a dry stout or your typical Guinness, and ended up tasting, I think, a little bit more like the extra stout. And I've certainly done American stouts before and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think this is new for me.
Okay. All right.
Sometimes you just got to go where the beer is tasting. You're like, okay, this is what it is.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're here for.
I'll be asking your guys' help on that later, potentially.
So. Oh, of course. For sure.
Where it goes.
100%. Well, let's jump into it. Brian, you want to start us off, bud?
Sure, yeah.
All right.
Cracked open, had a nice hiss. Seemed like good carbonation in there. In the aroma, getting a pleasant coffee-like notes up front with a hint of bitter chocolate. No obvious hops. There's a bit of roastiness in there, a little ashiness even. Low esters. The sweetness is low and out of the way. There's no real vanilla-like complexity or anything here. It's just roasts and more chocolate and bitter kind of smells. Although you can't really smell bitter, you can smell bitter malts and expect it to be something that's going to be bitter. Just like you can't really smell sweetness. Anyway. Both of those are in my description of the aroma here, and I stand by that statement. I'm not getting any DMS or diacetyl. It seems pretty clean. But I think I would just like something a little more in the aroma to complement that rich malt that's taking over. Appearance-wise, it's a nice deep black. It's really a pretty beer. A thick and well-formed, rich tan head. The clarity is difficult to discern, but it appears clear at the corners. You can almost see a little glow of red. But, yeah, it's just jet black and almost opaque. Flavor-wise, dark malts dominate here again with this bitter roast coming in really strong. Seems cleanly fermented and very well attenuated. It's super dry in the finish. I'm finding a medium bitterness in here, but not really a hop bitterness. These can have a kind of a medium to medium high hop bitterness, but this is all just malt bitterness to me. Definitely balanced the malt. Again, coffee and chocolate. Did I mention very, very dry? To me, I'm wishing there were just a little more complexity in the malt flavor there, but it is, I would say here, it's leaning towards that bitter, dark, dry version of the style that I mentioned when giving the overview. And that's one interpretation of it for sure. Getting some cocoa and a light ashiness lingering into the aftertaste. It's a pleasant beer. It dries off the tongue, but it goes on and on. It's like you're breathing a little campfire there at the end, but not in a harsh way, really. It's not smoky necessarily. It's just, boy, that roast is prominent and intense to me.
Yeah, I get that for sure.
Mouthfeel-wise, yeah, it's medium-bodied, moderate carbonation in there. I get a bit of astringency. It's coming from the darkest roasted grains, I'm sure, the huskiness in there. Yeah, and it's not very creamy. I'd like just a little more creaminess. There's no obvious warmth here going on. Just kind of there, and doesn't need to have any warmth. It doesn't need to be that huge. It can go up, you know, 1052 to 1062-ish kind of range. So it's not a super strong beer. It's just intensely malty and rich with that dark malt character. So, you know, a little astringency can be expected, although it'd really be better to get that out of the way. Overall impression, it's a pleasant drinking Irish extra stout. Apparently a cleanly brewed dark ale, and some good ingredients used here. What I just found mostly would benefit from a little more of the added malt complexity, what I would call maybe the kind of middle malts, give it some of that something kind of biscuity or something kind of, you know, a little more in the middle, and give some kind of vanilla character. And I think leaving a little more sweetness in the beer might do that. I just think it's just a little too on the dry side for even, you know, the extreme end of the style. Maybe it's really leaning towards that side, and adding a little more malt complexity would help it express itself just a little better. But overall, again, it's a good example of the bitter dry interpretation of this style. When you read through the guidelines, it's pretty much there. So I gave it a 35. I thought it was a pretty nice beer.
Excellent, Mr. Shar.
Great. I differ a little bit with Brian's opinion, but I think we kind of came down with the same recommendations in the end. I got a little more aroma than Brian did. I got definitely some vanilla and some roast at kind of a medium to low level, low chocolate. No hop aroma and no esters. Frankly, I thought it was a little more complex than Brian did. The combination of the chocolate, the coffee, the vanilla was all, I think, really interesting and really good. So gave that 10 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3. Color is extremely dark brown. I'm very pedantic about color. Not really a surprise to anyone who even knows me marginally that I would be pedantic about anything. So if you kind of look at the edge, you hold the glass up to the light and you kind of look at the very edge of that ring, it's really dark brown. No beer is ever jet black, no matter what the style guidelines say. Although if you look at it in the glass from a distance,
side on,
it's certainly jet black. So it's about as dark. There is none more black, as Spinal Tap would say.
There you go.
It would be really difficult to have a beer more black than this. It's as close to the platonic ideal as you're going to get. It's clear to the extent you can determine clarity, kind of tilting the glass and looking at the edge. Heads medium and persistent, gave that 3 out of 3 for appearance. Flavor's initially roast malt. There's some hot bitterness that comes up to balance that malt in mid-palate. There's a low coffee flavor, I think some chocolate. I don't get the vanilla in the flavor that I really get in the aroma. It's extremely well attenuated, really well fermented. And that's one of the things I like about this beer. Just from a personal standpoint, but kind of as Brian had said, it is kind of missing some, and to skip ahead a little bit to mouthfeel, it's missing some body because it's attenuated so well. It's well-balanced. Finish is short, balanced, and crisp. So I gave that a 12 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, I probably should have distributed my points a little bit differently. I had my flavor be a 13 and my mouthfeel be a 4. But I had my mouthfeel at a 5 out of 5. And so medium body, medium carbonation, slight warming, not really creamy. No, I didn't get the astringency myself. I drink a lot of stouts and porters, and I just think of, maybe I just drink enough that I gloss over some of the astringency from the dark malts, maybe more than other folks. But I gave that a pretty high score for mouthfeel. Overall impression was an 8 out of 10. This is something that you could, I think, mistake for a commercial beer because of the attenuation, right? Because so much homebrew is just not well attenuated.
You're right.
And just the fermentation character of this is commercial fermentation.
Yeah, I think that even a sweet beer, not that this is a sweet beer, but sweet beers can have a crispness, and that crispness comes from the final gravity, the solid fermentation, the proper yeast handling. That's the biggest differentiator.
Exactly.
Good pitch and keeping your yeast happy.
And like, so what Brian was talking about with the middle malts, I was kind of thinking, you know, I almost hate to give this advice because I love the attenuation so much. It may be a little less attenuation might put this a little more in the platonic ideal of the style. I kind of think Brian's idea of maybe different or additional middle malts might be a better one. Because the attenuation is just so much of a part of why this is, I think, a really nice beer. I gave this a 38 out of 50, and I would buy several rounds of this at the bar and be really happy about it. So well done.
Yeah. Excellent.
Thank you. But going back to the mouthfeel, too, first sentence of the mouthfeel section under 15C Irish Extra, medium full to full body with a somewhat creamy character. And you have told us, Brian Shar, that it is a medium-bodied beer, as yeah. I declared it to be,
yeah.
Without any creaminess, which I also declared it to be. And so, you know, I am at 3 on a mouthfeel. You're at 5. I understand you might have, you know, if you had redone your score sheet, you would have maybe adjusted
I was adjusting
that.
My score sheet a little bit before the show, and I did not. And by a little bit before the show, I mean like about 30 seconds.
He just breezed in from Fresno and did his score sheet in like 10 seconds.
I'm always hang on at the most exciting places. So I was going to stay in Fresno and come back here to Concord. So.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, what do you think about that?
Wow, that's really good to hear. Lots of good advice there. Let's see here. I'm actually surprised to hear you say how dry you thought the beer was, because I was really paranoid about the beer being dry enough, because the thing didn't attenuate near as much as I thought it should have based on my reading. But maybe that was just me thinking it wasn't as dry because of what the hydrometer was telling me. But
so what were your OG and your FG?
My original gravity was actually, like I said before, I was going for a dry stat. It was 1047, which is way too low for
low
this
end,
style.
Yeah. I mean,
but it finished out at 1016, which is, according to the guidelines, it's actually too high for everything. So I was kind of puzzled. I mean, I liked the beer, but I was trying to find a place for it, and I thought it tasted a little bit full and maybe not quite like a Guinness as far as dryness. So, yeah.
When did you bottle this?
I actually wrote that down. I think I
like in the
bottled
recent
this
past,
on the
or?
On the let's see the 10th
of this month of July.
Of July,
yeah,
yes, of July.
Yeah,
so there wouldn't be bottle fermentation.
No.
Yeah. Well, the FG on this beer can go up to like 1014, but that's probably one of the stronger versions of it is going to do that. That's really wild. It fooled us both.
Well, and with that roasty character, I think it does need a little goose, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that might be part of what's making it feel more dry than it is that lingering ashiness, and it just sticks onto your tongue, and the sweetness can't really compete with it.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting, I can speak English. It's an interesting example of something Jamil said a long time ago on one of the many, many years of quality content here on the Brewing Network.
There we go.
I wish I could kind of point you to where this was, but Jamil said at one time several years ago that final gravity alone is not dispositive of what the apparent attenuation feels like in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So something can have like a high number and feel really well attenuated, or vice versa, because it's inherently subjective. And I'm sure I'm butchering everything that he had said. So, Jamil, if you're listening, I apologize.
Never heard that. Never said it.
Jamil will probably call me tomorrow, and you know, I never said such a thing. But no, it's the perception that both Brian and I had was this is pretty well attenuated beer.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Okay, wow.
Jay, do you happen to have the recipe in front of you that maybe you can
enlighten us?
I do. Yeah.
Cool.
I'll go ahead and start with the water.
Let's do that.
I just used my house tap water and then added some Camden tablets to take out the chlorines and those kind of things.
What kind of tap water? Do you know if that's well water, river water, runoff? Do you know what your primary water source is for your municipality?
I believe it's river water. It's definitely on the harder side.
Okay.
Which I was going to ask you about too, because I know styles like Guinness traditionally have actually soft water, which is kind of strange for stouts, but anyway, for the grain, I had this is a 5.5 gallon batch, 7.4 pounds of Maris Otter, 2.6 pounds of flaked barley, 1.4 pounds of roasted barley, and 0.36 pounds of chocolate malt. And then for the hops, I had Styrian Goldings, two additions, 1 3/4 ounces at 60 minutes. And at 30 minutes, I put in another half an ounce. And for the yeast, I used Nottingham. It was a repitch from an earlier attempt at the same beer, which turned out not quite as good, I think. See, I fermented at 66 degrees and brought it up a few degrees toward the end of the 12 days. Yeah, cool. And I kegged it, like I said, about 12 days after it started, and just let it sit for another week or so at the room temperature.
That's fast.
Yeah. Chilled it pretty quick.
12 days.
Yeah.
After ferment, after you pitched,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
and you did a good job of carbonation out of the keg, because so many beers, and I'm guilty of this. I'm terrible at bottling out of my keg. So many bottled beers that you bottle out of the keg just end up being way too low carb. I think your carbonation was, to me, very appropriate.
Okay, what I try to do with that is just jack it up a little bit too high, because I know I'm going to lose some.
Yeah, there's too many brewers
that just,
just leave it at the keg. Okay, the keg is perfectly carbonated and then bottle from there, so yeah.
I've done that for years.
It'll be fine.
Yeah,
yeah, the Nottingham yeast is nice because it doesn't leave a lot of esters to get in the way of there. It just ferments cleanly and gets it down pretty dry, but yeah.
Yeah, well done. Where are you from?
I live in Indianapolis.
Oh, great. Are you in a homebrew club?
I am. I'm in the Foam Blowers of Indiana.
Oh, nice. Which
teaches me a whole lot about good brewing.
I've been arrested by those guys before. At Homebrew Con, I'm the guy. That's,
you know, they're
like
not the real cops, right?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
The mad scientist with the blue wig. And I have some pictures somewhere of some of those guys in their,
oh, really?
In their dark suits, like twisting my arm around my back and taking me in for questioning.
And there wasn't a cavity search
involved.
Yeah,
deep cavity searches.
There was some cavity searches.
Sir, please put the beaker down. What do you mean? Are you more cops? You're wearing sweatpants. What do you do?
It's okay.
Sir, please.
Yo, so speaking, actually, getting
sir,
back
I'm
to
need
actual...
you to make out with me.
Do you think they were taking advantage of me, those guys?
Sir, I'm going to need to run my fingers through your hair.
Getting back to actual homebrew.
They were fun guys, for sure. This is probably 10 years ago.
Nice.
So you were talking about how the hardness of your water for stouts and all, and there's been so much written about Guinness water. Zymergy had that article, like a year or two ago, about someone in-depth looking at the river water of Ireland and where does Guinness really get their water. And all of that stuff I kind of take with a grain of salt, because you never know what the brewery really does or really did historically to treat their water, right? So
sure.
Traditionally, and you know, Brian, maybe I'm wrong, but I like to brew stouts, and traditionally when you're brewing a stout, you want your water to be a little harder. And, you know, I tend to brew, my water at my home is on the soft side, so I will add some calcium carbonate or something like that to help get my water a little harder for stout. So that's to me, it sounds like it's perfect water for making this beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, hardness or not, the hard water is going to play off of the malts a little differently. Hardness versus softness aside, you definitely want to have a little more alkaline water to brew with all that acidic malt to get it to balance right. And I think they're probably at a pH 8 or something on their water, where our water is, you know, here is pretty hard too in my area, and it's probably great for brewing stouts with. So I don't brew that many of them, but like brewing an IPA and stuff, it just, you know, you have too much alkalinity and not enough acid in your malts to get it to come out quite right. But somehow the brewers here still do it, and we're making a lot of good West Coast things out here.
Jay, do you have any other questions for the boys before I kick you out of here?
Do you think this beer would do a little bit better if it were in the traditional Irish stout category, like the dry stout?
I think it's too bitter for that.
Yeah, I think there's too much flavor and also too much bitterness. I love regular Guinness draft and regular Irish dry stout, but this is a bigger beer than that in terms of flavor.
Okay.
You all right with that?
I did have a question.
You're going to be okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm going to be okay.
you're very quiet. I was like, oh, my God. Uh-oh. Someone fly out to Indianapolis. Uh-oh.
We killed him.
Go ahead. What's the question? Man? Yeah.
The last question I had was more of a general question. My beers in the last few years have always ended up too roasty. So what I've done is I've simply cut the roasted malts in half. For example, this recipe I got from the American Homebrewers Association website from an award winner. And I just took the roasted barley in the recipe and I cut it in half. And I thought it turned out okay. Is that just generally something that... Is that a common thing for just a certain brew house to have too roasty of beer?
Well, it's plenty roasty. So, yeah, if you would have used double the roasted malt in this, I think it would have been a little too much.
Okay.
But it may come down to something like your sparging procedures and, you know, what your mash pH is. Do you measure your pH?
Occasionally I do. I got lazy recently, but
so yeah, I mean the standard advice is to, you know, cut off your last runnings before they get down to like 10.08, and you know, keep your pH below 6 and your gravity, gravity I already mentioned, but the temperature below 168. Another thing you can do is just do a different kind of sparge altogether. Do a batch sparge instead of a fly sparge. Are you doing fly sparge? Or
I actually do brew in a bag. So
brew in a bag.
I lift all the grains out and then
that's
I'll
something I would
dip
tell
them
you to
in
do.
A second vessel.
No sparge.
That's no sparge.
No sparge, baby.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? Myself, I'm one that I love brewing stouts, and my personal preference is as the years go by, I keep dropping my roast malt and upping my chocolate malt.
That pale chocolate, dude, like, best addition for stouts you can ever make.
Yeah, I just, the place where I first moved up to the Bay Area in 2001, the local homebrew store, Fermentation Frenzy, Phil Montalbano, who owned that place, was like the first guy to get pale chocolate anywhere. And More Beer bought that location, probably 10 years ago, and they kept that up. But pale chocolate, regular chocolate, you get that layering of flavor, like Brian was talking about for layering your flavors. And you get some of those different, it's not just a one-dimensional roast or dark malt. You get several different kinds there. And that's just my personal preference. Sounds like it might be yours also.
Yeah.
Yeah, and try to find some good floor malted Maris Otter as the base too, because the base malt. I mean, I assume you're using a pretty good base malt because it's a good beer. And but yeah, a little
definitely
more of the complexity and the balance can come from just using that really nice floor malted like crisp Maris Otter, that kind of thing. The Glen Eagle maltings,
sure.
You know, yeah.
Yep. All right, Jay. Well, we got a split, man. I appreciate you sending your beers in. Or your three
thanks
beers,
so much for your feedback and your help and everything.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Have a great one.
All right. Cheers, guys.
See you, man.
Bye-bye.
Prost.
Right.
Yeah, I like that beer. That's pretty good, dude.
That was good.
Solid.
Yeah.
That's interesting,
right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to be drinking. What are we drinking? We're drinking a cream ale, I think, right?
Yeah.
Cream ale. There we go.
Made with real cream.
Cream ale. All right, everybody. This is Dr. Homebrew. We'll be, you know
left
rest.
Front.
You know the rest.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, back to the examination.
Hey, everybody. Thanks a lot for sticking around. Let me get Josh on the line here. I'm going to drink his cream ale, and I'm excited about that, dude, because cream ales are pretty darn good.
And I want everybody to know that. There's no cream in a cream ale, despite what people might have thought.
Despite what someone said yesterday?
Yeah. When I was in college and you used to get those Mickey's Big Mouths, man, I used to think there was somehow some cream in those, despite the fact you couldn't taste it.
Well, there's, that's a...
I was young and stupid.
That's a cocktail. Like the, it was like milk cocktails or whatever.
Yeah, don't drink those.
Yeah, I never had them. Apparently, they get you really messed up. Josh, are you there?
Hello.
Hey,
yes,
what's, what's going on, dude?
Not much. JP, how about you?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, hanging out with a couple of real fine gentlemen. You know what I'm trying to say?
Where are they?
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
What he means is nerdy and beer knowledgeable.
That's true. You know, that's true. All right, Josh. Hey, man, you got a cream ale that you sent to us. I appreciate that very much. Have you ever done a cream ale before?
No, it's the first time again, man.
All right. First time
again.
Man, I just brew the one thing the whole time. Right on. Well, cool. Hopefully we can, you know, help you out. Is there something that you aren't sure of about this recipe, or you want us to tell you if it is a cream ale, or maybe it's out of style, or anything you want out of this conversation?
Yeah. As far as like a style, because I've got the state fair coming up, and to just make sure that I should be entering it in there, because I think I might be a little bit out, but I don't know.
Okay. I love it. Brian Shar, you're up first, dude.
That's my name. Hey, before I get to your beer, Josh, real quick, where are you from?
Bridger, Montana.
Oh, nice. You in a homebrew club, or are you a lone wolf brewer?
No, part of a homebrew club, the Rimrock Brewers Guild.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yep.
So, yeah, thanks for sending this in to us. Going through starting off with the aroma. Starts off with kind of some low, yeasty, bready notes. Low, medium malt aroma. Don't really get any corn or rice, which was the thing about cream ale. There's no cream in it, of course, but a lot of people think there's got to be like a ton of corn or a ton of rice in this to be a cream ale. And there doesn't have to be any corn or rice at all. You know, there was a time frame a few years ago when the whole thing about cream ale was get more corn in there. And, you know, you don't need it, and this beer doesn't have it, and it doesn't need to be there. So that's kind of, in a way, refreshing to not have a cream ale that's trying real hard to be a corn bomb. No hop aroma. Don't really get any off aromas. Gave this an 8 of 12 for aroma. Appearance, there's a low haze to it, which is definitely not to style. This is supposed to be a very clear, beer. Head is medium-high with a long-lasting persistence. It's ivory in color. Color is a light gold. Gave this 2 out of 3 because of the haze factor. Flavor. Initially, flavor was malt, kind of a classic base malt slash two-row character to it. Low bready flavor. There's a hop bitterness to balance. Very low hop flavor. Kind of a spicy, noble hop is what I get. No off flavors, and no corn or rice like we talked about in the aroma. Finish is long, but very bready and malty. And I think kind of to me, I kind of think of that breadiness with the haze as kind of associated with the yeast here. Gave this 11 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, body is medium. Carbonation is low, much less than expected for style. It's creamy. I think it's because it's, you know, got kind of that medium body. No astringency, no warming. Gave that a 3 out of 5, primarily due to the low carbonation. Overall impression is a 6 out of 10. In terms of things I'll want to discuss later on, but, you know, kind of the obvious areas for improvement, carbonation needs to be higher, and I'll be curious to find out later on after Brian's score sheet how you package this. This beer really needs to be crystal clear. So whether you gelatin fine or cold crash or filter or however you clear this beer, it really needs to be a lot clearer than this. And that alone would probably get you like 5, 6, 7 points higher just to have this be clear. It would probably also clear up some of that yeasty, bready kind of flavor character. So overall, I mean, it's a decent beer. I gave this 30 out of 50, which is a very good score. I've enjoyed my sample, and there are, I think, a few easy things to do to fix that. Brian, what do you think?
Well, I think appearance is only 3 points, so it's not going to drop just on the appearance alone, it's not going to drop it 5 points. But
well, it's the things associated with it's the things associated with the
flavors that come along with
the flavor and the aroma.
No, I just wanted to joke with you a little bit there,
Ryan.
So yeah, and the aroma, it's a low malt, again, kind of a low bready and yeasty thing going on. I agree there. I got a light corn-like note in there. It wasn't heavy, but you know, the esters are faint and kind of out of the way, not very fruity, so that's nice. It's not usually a big fruity beer. No, you know, low hops with a hint of spicy and floral quality. Low DMS, nothing excessive there, and it can have a little bit for the style. And no acetaldehyde or diacetyl. Again, appearance-wise, I agree. It's kind of this dark yellow-colored beer with a moderate haziness. That's cool these days. So, you know, go with it.
Everything should be
don't
a
worry
hazy
about
blank.
What Char says.
Hazy Hefeweizen, yeah.
It's got a white-colored head. It stuck around actually fairly well. And even had some lacing on my first pour. We're kind of still working on the same bottle, so it's gone down even a little bit more. But, you know, mostly finer bubbles there. I gave it a 2 out of 3 for appearance and just knocked it down a point for the haze. So, in the flavor, it's cleanly malty. Very low corn-like character. Again, that's not critical. Some faint DMS, and the fruitiness, again, is low. It finishes kind of, I guess I could say semi-sweet, semi-dry kind of territory. It's got a little sweetness to it, but it's not cloying at all. The beer seems cleanly fermented. And I do get a touch of, unlike, I don't know, Brian, we might taste corn differently, but I get a little corn-like sweetness in the aftertaste. It's not absent. It's balanced to the malt. There's low bitterness out of the way. Seems like a pretty cleanly brewed, low temperature ale. Not getting any diacetyl or acetaldehyde, and there's a faint spice in the hop that lingers in there too. But it's not really high at all. It's just kind of backgroundy balancing. Mouthfeel wise, you know, the mouthfeel to me on this beer just didn't quite feel like it should. I mean, this should be a really refreshing, crisp beer. Think of cream ale as you know, lawnmower, you know, an ale version of Budweiser, kind of lawnmower beer that you can drink mass quantities of and you know, pound a few of them back.
Cut off your foot with the lawnmower blade while you're doing it.
So it should be, you know, pretty light-bodied. I'd say this is more towards kind of medium-bodied, and it just feels a bit big to me. And the carbonation is medium low.
Mm-hmm.
Should be quite a bit spritzier there. So that's two of the big driving factors, and that affects everything else too. Not just the appearance, the haziness affects everything. If there's something in the haze that gives it flavor, the mouthfeel affects everything. It's just that the gas in the beer is gone. It doesn't have that crisp carbonic bite to just dry it off your tongue and make you want another sip. So that's kind of odd for this beer. There's no obvious warmth. It's not astringent. It's not biting or harsh at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a nice, it seems like the base beer is nice, but it's just a little lifeless because of what's going on there. Kind of flabby, I guess you could say, because it's just kind of sits on the tongue and doesn't dry off your tongue like it should and give you that refreshing note. So, you know, pretty nice cream ale overall. Many of the desired elements and, actually, fairly good balance. I think the recipe itself is not too bad. It's just these finishing touches, clarifying, drying out the finish a little bit more, and making it that refreshing and thirst-quenching lawnmower beer that you want it to be. You know, so just pushing up the carbonation will do a lot for you. Really make the beer pop. And if you clarify it, that's going to get some of those flavor components out too, and get some things out of the way. But yeah, definitely work on that mouthfeel here and the appearance. Recipe seems pretty good. You can increase the corn a little bit. But yeah, I give it a 32. I thought it was a very good beer, very drinkable, and you know, for entering it in competition.
Yeah, how's he gonna do? What do you think?
If you have it in a keg, there's some things you can do.
Are these all bottled?
No, I have keg too.
Oh, okay,
but I did do bottling because I did the natural carbonation.
Okay.
Oh, okay. With them all. So.
All right. Well, so you can goose the carbonation in the keg and see what that's about, and bottle some off of that.
Bump up the carbonation. Put some Biofine or something in there to clarify it, maybe. Or you know.
When's the deadline?
The 30th.
Yeah.
So next week.
Yeah. Very shortly.
If you have enough time to do anything like gelatin or transfer keg to keg from after that, but
yeah, I mean
you can do gelatin in overnight.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Gelatin.
Okay.
I mean, maybe I can chat just very briefly about this.
Maybe.
Dwight in my homebrew club, Words of Wisdom. Dwight was like the king of gelatin flatting and taught us all how to do this. And at least the Dwight method is you get like the you get a cup of filtered pure water that is not contaminant. It's not your tap, but something that you've boiled and let sit. You add a packet of gelatin. And you gradually heat it up in the microwave pretty slow so you don't make the thing into this solid mess. You might put it on like 10 and heat it for 10 minutes. And just kind of check it every minute or so and just make sure it's not just gotten denatured or just become this big jelly mess. The point of heating that up is when you pour that into your keg or your fermenter or whatever that is, it sits on the top because hot things will stratify toward the top and cold things stratify toward the bottom. So when that layer sits on the top and it's in your temperature-controlled kegerator, fermentation fridge, whatever, it gradually cools off at the same temp as the beer.
And then it's heavier.
Exactly. So then the gelatin becomes heavier. So as a big kind of pancake, it slides down your keg or your fermenter or what have you. And as it slides down, it lets the beer through, but it kind of pushes the polyphenols and the yeast and what have you down to the bottom. And sure, later on, you'll want to maybe cut your dip tube if you're doing this out of your keg, or have one that has a maybe slightly higher dip tube in the first place. But it's always done, when I've used this method, a really good job. It takes overnight, right? You do this at bedtime, and when you wake up in the morning,
next day,
that
nice and clear.
Gelatin, you've got pretty clear beer.
Well, give it a shot. I think that's worth trying. I haven't really done much gelatin finding myself, so I always thought it took a little longer than that. But that's cool, actually.
Yeah.
So I did do it in my keg with gelatin findings, and I got the stuff from LD Carlson, that comes in a little bottle, and it says that you actually need to soak it in cold water for an hour and then add boiling water to dissolve. But I'm very impatient, so I don't let it soak in the cold water, and I just kind of do what you say. I've got RO water, put it in the microwave, boil it get it up to boiling a couple minutes, whatever, and then I just feed what it says to add for the ratio.
Don't add it to the boiling water
and rack on top.
Don't, if you add it to the boiling water, you'll denature it, and you've killed the gelatin enzymes or the killed what's in the gelatin that makes it work. So that's the problem.
Okay.
And the thing, I use just the plain Knox gelatin from the grocery store, the unflavored. Of course, you don't want to get like the vanilla or peach or whatever that weird stuff is. Maybe if you're making a Berliner Weiss, maybe you want to, but. You just get the plain old unflavored gelatin you use that. It's in a packet, the
can
powder.
Can you fine with Jello? Wouldn't that be kind of a trip to do like cherry Jello just to see what happened? I would be very curious because it would form at the bottom. Would it clear anything out? And would it have an impact on your beer a little bit? I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Damn, girl. Yeah, I'm doing that next year for HomebrewCon. Let's do some Jello find beers. What do you say, Brian?
And then you can eat the Jello afterwards.
Yeah.
Cherry Jello mead or something.
We can do yeasty Jello shots.
Yeah.
Hazy Jello.
Yeah. This is totally what we're doing for HomebrewCon next year.
Do we want to listen to his recipe here a little bit?
Yes,
what do we got
do.
Going on?
Yep. So you guys should have that in front of you because I sent that over too.
Oh yeah.
But I'll just let you know. So I'll round the numbers up so we don't have to do point percentages. So
thank you.
57% two row, 20% corn, 10% Vienna, 7.5% of Munich malt, and then 6% of caramel or crystal malt, 10 level bond is what I did. Okay. And then I boiled Hallertauer, I guess that's how you say it, probably not, for 60 minutes. And then in the whirlpool, or 2 ounces, sorry, 2 ounces of Hallertauer for 60 minutes. And then in the whirlpool at 180 degrees, I did 2 ounces of Hallertauer and 1 ounce of Citra. And then I dropped it down and fermented about 64. I mashed in at 152. So I don't know if I should mash lower to dry this out or get lighter body.
What did it finish at?
And 10, 11.
Okay, that's pretty good. Maybe
it started out at 1052.
What's the point of having that light crystal malt in there? Yeah, I mean that. I think some of the body might be coming.
I don't know.
There.
I just pulled the recipe off of Beersmith, the community, or something like that. Yeah. So should I not have that in there?
I don't think it would hurt you to pull that out and see what difference it makes. But
Then maybe push it, because I was at the top of, you know, I was at 5.4.
Yeah.
Is what it finished at for ABV. So maybe if I just pull that completely, it shouldn't hurt me that much. As ABV, if anything, it'll drop it a little bit, maybe get it closer into that middle range, I guess, instead of at the top.
Yeah. Huh? I mean, you can mash at 149 and dry it out a little bit more too, and do a little bigger yeast pitch, oxygenate a little better maybe at the beginning, and just give that yeast the best chance you can to go and go and go.
Yeah. Okay. And also another thing too, is I think the haze is chill haze, because I cold crashed this, from 68, because I let it rise a little bit. So I did 64 let me see my notes. Hold on. 64, and then for 10 days, I said I did warm it up to 68, but then I cold crashed the next day to 40, and it only took me 6 hours to crash 8.5 gallons to 40 degrees. So I don't know if that was too fast. You think that was too fast of crashing it?
I mean, maybe. How fast can you really go? What's the average of that? You know, a degree an hour or less? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
What did Josh? I'm sorry. What yeast again did you use?
Oh, I used let me just flip back here. The cream ale yeast, White Labs, WLP Oledo.
Okay. I'm not familiar. Okay. I've never brewed with that one, but you would think that's the perfect one to use for a cream ale.
And so you didn't put.
You would think.
Yeah, you didn't put any sugars or anything in your boil.
I did not.
Okay,
no. And that would probably dry it out a little.
Isn't the trick? Yeah, throw some glucose in there. Just try to get it up to get the sugar content up a little bit, so it dries out a little better. That's going to help you.
Did you guys taste the citra at all?
Oddly, not really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty proud of myself that I nailed the noble hop in this, but I didn't get the citra myself.
Yeah, I made a weird face here when you said citra. I'm just like. I was kind of
thinking 1 out of 2 ain't bad.
But. Yeah, I mean, there's a lemony quality, but it would be hard. I wouldn't have known that it's from the hops.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, even having heard Citra, I just had a sip, and I'm not getting the Citra.
Mm.
How old was the Citra, do you know?
I think it's pretty old, actually. So, that probably has something to do with it.
Did it come out of a previously opened package?
No, it was sealed. It was vacuum sealed in those 1 ounce deals, you know.
Cool. Did you store it in your fridge, or was it stored out in your garage or something, or what?
Garage, man.
Now, of course. What are those things homebrewers going to do? Yeah, that may explain why the Citra wasn't real prominent.
Okay. All right.
Anything else, Josh?
I think that's about it, man. I think that the gelatin lesson helped me out a bunch. I mean,
check it out.
Definitely try and do that. Just slowly raise the temperature, huh? Up to boiling, I guess.
Yeah, or not too boiling. It needs to be warm. You know, like 140, 150. If you boil it, you destroy the gelatin and its ability to do anything. Because it's kind of I'm not a chemist, but kind of gelatin's like a big molecule, and what it does is when you pour it on, when it's warm and you pour it on top of your beer, it's like a big mat. Imagine like these molecules are long molecules, and they form like this big. If you blew it up like 10,000 times magnification, it would look like a big mat
or sponge.
Of fibers or sponge exactly. And kind of what it does is the spaces in that matting let the liquid go through, but it pushes the polyphenols, which are big molecules, and the yeast and the other stuff down to the bottom.
Okay.
And that's when you boil it, you blow those fibers up. So they're not. You don't make a mat. You just have like a bunch of
loose fibers,
bunch of loose bits, little bits at the dust at the top, and then it sinks to the bottom, and it doesn't do anything. It just sinks to the bottom with your other some of your yeast.
You break the connections. Right.
You break all the connections.
Yeah.
You've wrecked it. If anyone takes nothing away from Dr. Homebrew today, than this, don't boil your gelatin before you try to gelatin fine.
That's true.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, and probably pour it on top instead of racking it on top of it, because I've been racking on top.
Yeah, if you rack on top, there's nothing, there's nowhere for it to go. I mean, it can, if it's warm, it may migrate to the top, but it also might cool off so much that it's not going to form that mat at the top of your beer.
And by God, don't feed that beer to a vegan.
Or just don't tell them.
They might panic. Kosher. All right, Josh, we'll let you go, man. I appreciate the time and...
Thanks for the beer. It was really good.
Yeah,
it was
for sure.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate your sharing.
Cool. Stuff.
Yep. No problem, guys. You guys have a good night. Thank
you. I do. You too. Bye.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll just sort of wrap things up, and we'll get out of here. This is Dr. Homebrew. You know, we'll be back and stuff, bro. I don't know.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Craft Kings.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
That's right, baby. Pour me out. Let's go. Anyway, here we are, Dr. Homebrew. We're going to wrap things up a little bit. We want to talk about HomebrewCon. I was not there, but Brian and Brian were there, and they met some people, so they want to give a couple shout-outs here and there to everybody, and that'd be nice.
Well, my friends from the Mad Zymergist came on one of the shows, it was fun to have some buddies on there and just chat about beer with them. And then these guys from the Miami Area Society of Homebrewers, the MASH Club down there, brought a bunch of beers. We actually had three beers, if you're listening through, on one show. So, boy, we really had to keep things moving along. Mm-hmm. And we also got to interview the Bells guys, and they had a nice booth there. And definitely, listen back to those shows. And thanks to... to Jay for coming on and filling in JP's shoes there, but
that's right, baby,
Mr. Justin, the captain of this ship here. He somehow intuitively figured out the shit we do and put it together. But thanks to everybody that was kind of hanging around the booth, and I poured some Pliny for people. People were just hanging out and having a good time, so it was kind of cool to be there.
And it was so great, just people, a club night or anywhere at the convention would just come up and say hi. And it's really, as the newest of the Doctor's Homebrew, it was really kind of gratifying and unexpected to have just total strangers from just all over this great land of ours just come up and say hi, and just really fantastic people, and really want to thank everyone for their support of the show.
That's
and
a good feeling,
for being
for sure.
so nice to Brian and I while we were out there.
Awesome.
Well, hear your voice Wonderful. From across the room. That's a very distinctive Dr. Homebrew voice. So welcome. Hello. Welcome. You're a part of it now, man.
It's true. Can't get out of it. All right. Well, that was very lovely, gentlemen. I wish I had some sort of, people to thank, but I don't.
Impart some wisdom to us.
I don't necessarily... Let's see if I have any wisdom.
You said to drink Coors Light at the end of the night? Is that a wise thing to do?
I would. Talking about the B&A party, I would definitely have been down drinking Coors Light.
They ran out of the good stuff.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I'll drink Coors Light all day long. I like it. And I don't care who knows about it. Even though I complain a lot about not craft beer, but at least Coors Light knows what it is. It's fine with
not
it.
Not pretentious.
It doesn't have to sell itself as something else to make any money. That's just my opinion. I don't know. Anyway, everybody, thanks a lot for tuning in. This has been Dr. Homebrew, and you've been great. Good night.